I look at our gospel lesson and I find that my initial reaction is much the same as it was even when I was a small child, the first time I heard this, at least my earliest recollection of hearing this, is asking the question, who would think healing is wrong? And that's where the sermon title comes from. It's just, how could anybody look at this and see it as wrong or as something that shouldn't happen? And the easy way to deal with this passage, I suppose, is just say, well, they were crazy and move on. But I think there's more to it than that, or at least I think there's more there for us than that. And as I was thinking of it, I realized I was thinking in some ways sort of as the larger church, or at least the larger group of religious people that we would identify with, rather than this particular community of faith, as you know. This isn't directed, my thoughts certainly weren't directed at anything in particular here at Knox. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, it's easy for us to point our finger at these people and say, you know, like, what's wrong with you? You know, this is just, no one would ever think this. Or would they? As I was thinking of this, the thing that helped me sort of process this is to get past this idea of healing in and of itself, to get past sort of the obvious parts of the story, and look instead at the response that the synagogue ruler is saying, that he's indignant, and to figure out why is he indignant, and does that have anything for us? And that's where I think it does. The indignation of the synagogue ruler makes us uncomfortable if we think there's even a possibility that we might have similar and equally useless indignation. And I'm certainly not going to try and figure out any kind of examples that zero in on each one of us. But I think all of us will have things somewhere that we look at and say, well, no, that just doesn't fit with who we are or whatever it might be. Because when we look at the larger picture of what Jesus is doing here, is he's saying that you have taken rules, in this case, of course, the Old Testament law, you've taken rules that were there for a particular purpose, and you've expanded their purpose till they don't make sense anymore. And so much the same kind of thing when I was growing up. I was at that age where we were making the transition from the thought of coming to church in anything other than dressed up in your Sunday best, which of course where it comes from, was just beginning to be shaken a little bit. Because when I was little, I went to church in a tie. In the early days, it was a clip-on tie. And then later on, it became an actual tied tie. And I can still remember this feeling of guilt is the wrong word. I'm trying to figure out the right way to describe it. When we were on vacation with my family, we did not travel with Sunday best, but we still went to church. And so we would go to the nearest church that my parents thought would have what we needed. And my parents being my parents, it was usually pastored by somebody they knew. And so we would go there, but we'd go there dressed in jeans or even in shorts. And that sense of you're getting away with something. Well, what were we getting away with? We weren't getting away with anything. We were going to worship God because that's what we did on Sundays. That was part of our family's life. And whether you know the kids understood it or not, whether I had any relationship, that's irrelevant. I mean, this is part of who we were, and we went there. If we would have gone to my home church dressed the same way, people would have asked, I suspect, quite honestly, did we have a house fire? Because you didn't go to church in jeans. You didn't go to church in shorts. You if you were a man, you wore at least a suit, probably a tie to go with it, and all of these things. And if you didn't, there was something amiss. Why? Well, I think all of this, as everything, or just about everything, sprang from good motives, this idea that you dress to demonstrate your respect for the place and for the time you're in. The church isn't just playing in the playground. And I wasn't alive when this came in, so I don't know how fulfilling or how helpful it was. But what I do know is that by the time I was an older child, none of that meant anything. What church meant was putting on uncomfortable clothing, going and sitting in an uncomfortable place for what seemed at that time to be an interminable amount of time. To what end? I suppose it's possible that what we, and there's research that suggests that how we dress affects how we think and all of that. But we as a church, the larger church, had missed the point of what was going on in the culture that no longer said that dressing up was a sign of respect. Dressing up was just dressing up. It was almost like putting on a costume. There have been all kinds of changes in the church in my lifetime. And one of the ones that I find most refreshing, most helpful, is seeing children, in the summertime in particular, coming to church wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Church, for smallish children, and I'm thinking, you know, sort of any 10 and under, is an odd thing. Because it's odd, even like this isn't even like school. They don't get lectures at school. They do things at school. It's a different experience. The only time that they're asked to come and sit and listen to somebody talk for quite a while, really, is here. So if they're doing something new, it only makes sense that we make them as comfortable in the newness as possible. It's not out of the question, I think, to suggest that children these days, at least potentially, can get more out of a conventional worship service than I did, because there are fewer things to get in the way for them, like their clothes. And for those of you, and even for me, who have, you know, I've been wearing a suit off and on for decades now. Back in the 80s, when I worked in a suit and tie job and still went to church, I was wearing a suit 6 days a week. I used to say I could play basketball in a suit if I had to. It was just part of what you were. There aren't very many people like that anymore, and there certainly aren't very many kids who are used to getting all dressed up in these clothes that don't feel normal. I was never on the receiving end of somebody telling my parents, "Why is your kid not dressed up properly?" But I've heard of it. I've heard parents who were, at least hopefully with some kind of compassion, rebuked for their children coming to church not dressed properly. Is that so much different than this synagogue ruler? The synagogue ruler, I believe that his, because of course it was a man, that his heart was not in the wrong place. He was looking at a particular thing. He was looking at the importance of the Sabbath. He wasn't indifferent to the suffering of this woman, I don't think, or indifferent to the joyous release of suffering. But he was so focused on a particular thing that he lost track of what's most important. Now, we have to be careful here. I'm not advocating in any way this idea that we get to decide always what's most important. Because, you know, down that way is a peculiar kind of relativism where we end up with, well, I like it, so it must be good. Which really isn't true, and I don't think any of us believe that. Because what we see, what Jesus is doing here, when he responds to the synagogue ruler, he doesn't say, you know, you're an idiot. He doesn't attack him that way. He doesn't say that you have no compassion or anything of that nature directly. But what he says is, look at your own life and look at what you're doing here from that larger perspective. Instead of looking solely at the desire to maintain the Sabbath in a particular way, look at the fact that even though you say you do not work on the Sabbath, you take care of the animals that you have. You don't look at the barn and say, well, I'm sure the ox are thirsty. I'm sure the donkeys would like something to eat, but it's the Sabbath, they're just going to have to suffer. Of course not. You would never do that. Jesus says, should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her? And it says there, it's clear in the text, that when he said this, all his opponents were humiliated, which I don't think was his intention, but I think they suddenly realized, wait a second, we've lost sight of what really matters. The Sabbath is important, of course. But as it says in another place, the Sabbath was created for people, not people for the Sabbath. And I think they suddenly realized that, wait a second, we got so focused on this particular kind of thing that we acted as if we think healing is wrong, when we don't. We think it's wonderful. And I think back to those children, those early children who were coming to church dressed in ways that were not the norm. And I wonder how many parents took the time to think through, when I send my kids to school and I want them to learn, do I send them in things that they are comfortable in or things they are uncomfortable in? Do I send them to school dressed in ways that are common to them and allow them to focus on other things rather than the scratchiness of their jacket? Because I had a jacket like that. How does a jacket poke you on the inside? I don't know. I had one. The only time I ever wore it was to church. That's what I was paying attention to, and I'm sure other people had similar kinds of things. How many parents said, you know, I don't do this for school where I want my kids to learn. Maybe I should stop doing this for church. And I wonder if anyone who was approached, possibly even rebuked for sending their children to church, dressed as they were to school, if their response was, I understand how you might think they should be dressed otherwise, but I want them to be able to pay attention as well as they can, just like when I send them to school. What would your answer be to that? Well, you have no answer to that. You want these children to not pay attention? Of course not. And what it would do is it would pull us back from to the larger picture that says the purpose of a worship service is not to look a particular way, it's to engage with the living God. It's to learn, it's to participate, it's to share in the collective experience. How many of those things might we have today? I don't have any particular examples, certainly not specific to this place, because I really like this congregation. I hold up Knox and I like St. Mark's, I hold up St. Mark's as well, as examples of how churches can be open and welcoming to new people and to new ways of doing things, of examining what we do from the perspective of we've done this for a long time. Is it still the way we want to do it? And if the answer is yes, we continue. But if the answer is no, we change. Because it's looking beyond the immediate particulars of something to the larger picture of what are we trying to accomplish. Of course no one's going to think healing is wrong. And of course no one is ever going to think that it makes sense to make it as hard as possible for children to engage in a worship service. But sometimes our actions, based on what we're trying to do in other places, lead us to this where someone could look at us and say, you don't think healing is a good idea? Your preference is that children find it as hard as possible to pay attention? Or your church is such that it's really difficult for older people to enjoy the service? Or younger people to understand what's going on? You think that's the point? Whatever it might be. When we look at particularly the stories in the Gospel of Jesus' interaction with the religious people of the day and with, well, people in general, it's easy for us to step back as New Testament people and look at synagogue rulers and other such people and just go, you were so dumb. Well, they weren't dumb. Everything I see suggests that they meant well and wanted to do well. They just lost sight of what was most important. And I look at this passage, this story of this crippled woman, and I work hard at trying to take a step back and saying, where am I by my actions or by my outward statement saying that healing isn't a good idea, which isn't something I believe? Where am I projecting this idea that says if you don't do it my way or you don't do it according to my interpretation of scripture or whatever it might be, then you're simply wrong.
Because what this story does, or at least what it can do, is it can allow us to approach what we do and what we think is important with some humility.
Not prepared to jettison everything that we do at a moment's notice, because that's not what's going on here either. But with the humility that says that we as human beings are capable of overreacting, we're capable of applying the same rules to all situations, whether they fit or not. In Maslow's famous words, for the person with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. We can all be that way, because we're all human. That's just part of being alive. But this story, with an indignant synagogue ruler in the face of a healed woman praising God, reminds us that anyone can overapply things that are important and things that are even right, putting them in places where they don't really belong. Because if a synagogue ruler can do it, I'm pretty sure I can too. And I'm pretty sure I have. But this story calls us to humility, to looking at what we're actually trying to accomplish, looking at what a worship service or a synagogue service is actually about, and being willing to have our sense of what's best, maybe even what's appropriate, to be modified, to be changed. Because what we're most interested in is serving the living God, of becoming the person that we were created to be, becoming conformed more and more every day through the power of the Spirit to the person of Jesus Christ. But we can't do that if we think we're always right. We need to have the humility that says, I could be wrong, and the willingness to change when we are. Amen.